Welcome to this edition of Eye on the Peninsula, a current affairs program produced at the RPPFM station in Mornington. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham. In this part of the program, we discuss the free trade agreement with Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Honourable Julie Bishop. The Anzac spirit lives on with the unveiling and dedication to the Frankston War Memorial on the weekend. And Premier Daniel Andrews talks about what his government proposes to do after the release of the Royal Commission's recommendations on family violence. We begin with the Minister for Foreign Affairs, the Honourable Julie Bishop, visited Mornington on Saturday to discuss the Free Trade Agreement. The Minister, together with Federal Minister for Dunkley, Mr. Bruce Bilson, and Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Chris Crowther, visited a couple of small businesses in Mornington. Their visit included a walk down Main Street Mornington, where they spoke to retail owners and greeted delighted locals. Deborah Maher caught up with the Minister at the Mornington Peninsula Brewery to ask how the Free Trade Agreement will benefit small and medium businesses on the peninsula.
We're visiting small businesses in this area to tell them of the benefits that the Free Trade Agreements that Australia has signed with China, Japan and South Korea can bring for them. And this is an historic opportunity for small and medium businesses to develop products or start businesses or grow businesses to sell their goods and services into our region. What it means for Mornington Peninsula Brewery, for example, is that the tariffs on beer will eventually go to zero in South Korea and we'll be able to be competitive with other countries in selling our goods and services into the fastest growing economic region in the world within China, Japan and South Korea and beyond.
There are many small boutique businesses on the peninsula. How will supply equal demand? The Minister replied.
The brand Made in Australia or Australian Made is very popular, particularly in our region, because it means high quality, and so our businesses are able to scale up to respond to the demands. Of course, they need to be mindful of the laws of supply and demand, that if they break into a market, they have to be prepared to be able to supply the demand. But this brewery is a wonderful example. They're now employing 24 people. They have contracts to sell into Singapore and China and Japan, and they will carefully and prudently supply these markets and keep growing their businesses over time.
A question Deborah put to the Minister was the concern about foreign investors buying up local businesses on the Mornington Peninsula. This is what the Minister had to say on the topic.
First, Australia needs foreign investment. We don't have significant enough domestic savings to support all the projects and all the requirements that only foreign investment can bring. So Australia welcomes foreign investment. We always have, we always will. We have in place a foreign investment review board and a regime of regulations to ensure that foreign investment is in the national interest and to ensure that while we need foreign investment, it's also regulated by the Foreign Investment Review Board. So that's already in place. But there are some wonderful examples of companies needing investment, getting it from overseas and being able to build their businesses here, employ more Australians, sell more products, sell more services. Australian businesses can decide what they want to do with their business. This is a free country. People, if they don't want to sell their business, they don't have to sell their business to overseas interests. They can seek Australian buyers. But we need foreign investment, and those who are selling their businesses know that if they are able to gain a fair purchase price, well, then that's an opportunity to invest in something else. And foreign investment drives more business, more economic growth. And we have a non-discriminatory Foreign Investment Review Board process. Wherever the investment comes from, if it meets certain thresholds, it's subject to Foreign Investment Review Board analysis.
An excited Federal Minister for Dunkley, Mr. Bruce Bilson, spoke highly of local businesses and how the Free Trade Agreement offers more opportunities in the market.
It's also a great story for established businesses, family businesses on the peninsula that have spent decades building up that enterprise, looking to retire, getting investment, particularly from overseas and locally, is a great succession plan. It can keep those businesses alive. It can take them to the next level. It can create more opportunities and, importantly, see those founders and those that created the businesses properly rewarded for their generations of dedication. So, you know, we're well placed to discern between investment opportunities, make sure it's not in conflict with our national interest, but to carry the economy forward and carry great businesses forward and to refresh and reinvest in them. So we're very excited about that. Not very far from here, we've got Blue Bay Cheese. Andre and his Ukrainian family. What a great story. Not only bringing their wealth and their insights, but their experience, cheese-making skills from the finest European traditions, now being manufactured here in Mornington. So, you know, we need to be open to that kind of input, that energy, those new insights, the new ways to delight customers, not just here in our economy, but as the Minister's been discussing today, these trade agreements, that's hundreds of millions of new prospective customers that we can delight, we can profit from, we can grow jobs from. So it's a really positive story for our region.
Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Chris Crowther, mirrored Mr. Bilson's views on the free trade agreement with China, Japan and South Korea. He added,
"There's a wonderful opportunity here in Dunkley and surrounds on the peninsula to expand our local economy and to expand our exports from this market. We have free trade agreements with Korea, China and Japan. Particularly in the agricultural space, we have a clean, green, high-quality image both on the peninsula and in this country. So with tariffs either being eliminated and or reduced over time, businesses have an opportunity to get into those export markets and to promote the wonderful produce that we are producing here on the peninsula."
Going back to supply and demand again, now there's a lot of small businesses down here that don't have a lot of land. And if there's pressure on them to produce more, then could that have a problem with soil degradation or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I think in regards to Australia's export opportunities, our market advantage or our market edge is with our high quality, clean, green image. So with that, you can produce a lesser quantity of actual products, but sell it at a higher price. That's where on the peninsula we can take advantage of that for our exports and for our local businesses.
And of course, the new MPP, which is the Mornington Peninsula Produce. Can you talk us through that a little bit, Chris? Thank you.
It's a wonderful brand and initiative, the Mornington Peninsula Produce. It's important in promoting that high quality localisation we have here on the peninsula in terms of what we are producing. It creates a brand for the region, so it's a recognisable brand both within Australia, within Victoria, but also overseas to our top three export markets, and there's a lot of potential to expand. By marketing the produce we're producing on the peninsula, we promote the region for tourism and a whole range of other businesses as well.
Thank you so much, Chris.
That was Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Mr. Chris Crowther, ending discussions with Foreign Affairs Minister Julie Bishop and Federal Member for Dunkley, Mr. Bruce Bilson, who visited Mornington on the weekend. Thank you to Deborah Maher for that report. Sunday marked the unveiling of the new location for the Frankston War Memorial in Beauty Park. The unveiling and dedication was attended by special guest speakers Mr. Dennis Hovenden, Mayor Councillor James Dooley of Frankston, Federal Member for Dunkley, the Honourable Bruce Bilson, President of the Frankston RSL, Mr. Kevin Hillier, and other dignitaries. This is what Mayor Councillor James Dooley told Deborah about the new War Memorial and the day's proceedings.
A proud moment for you today down here in Frankston to unveil the new war memorial. Can you tell us a little bit about the design?
The original concept was a little bit bigger than what it is today, and it didn't have some of the design elements such as the cenotaph and the eternal flame. We revised the design for a couple of things. One, we wanted a true dawn service. So if you look over your shoulder, you'll see that the sun can rise, not impeded by any buildings or anything. It'll come up and it'll actually line up with both the eternal flame and the cenotaph on the morning. The idea is for it to hit the brass rim around the back and basically shine the brass rim. What we've basically looked for is something that gave a true dawn service. Most war memorials, they don't do this well. Obviously, the one in Villiers-Broughton in France does it well, but we were after something not as big as that, but something a little bit more dignified and tasteful that we could commemorate.
The crowd is rolling in. What's going to happen in, as far as the ceremonies today?
It's a dedication. We've got both members of the RSL, members of the state and Commonwealth government here. We'll be planting two lone pines as well, descendants of the original lone pine. It'll be good.
Frankston Mayor Councillor James Dooley and President of Frankston RSL, Mr. Kevin Hillier, addressed the crowd, saying,
"It is indeed a great honour for me today to represent all serving and ex-servicemen and women who have called Frankston their home at the opening of this memorial. It's been a long, drawn-out process for at least 10 years, and I thank the committee members from the RSL for their diligence and commitment to attaining this memorial in these surroundings. I thank the Frankston Council for providing this memorial for the Frankston community, and I'd also like to acknowledge the work of Councillor Darrell Taylor, who during his term as Mayor ensured that this project got underway. During these centenary years of the First World War and up to current engagements, there are many occasions when this memorial could be used to reflect on battles that have occurred involving Australian soldiers, sailors and airmen. Today, the 10th of April, is the 75th anniversary of the Siege of Tobruk in 1942. This battle lasted 241 days until the 27th of November. 830 members of the 9th Division and attached troops gave their life. 2,177 were wounded and 941 taken prisoner. Royal Australian Navy suffered heavily as well, losing 2 destroyers, 3 sloops and 21 smaller craft.
President of Frankston RSL, Mr. Kevin Hillier, speaking. You'll hear the full report and interviews with guest speaker on the Frankston War Memorial unveiling in next week's Eye on the Peninsula. Former member of the Victorian Legislative Assembly, Mr. Jeff Shaw, played the bagpipes in the opening of this report. Last week on Eye on the Peninsula, we discussed the Royal Commission's recommendations to the Victorian government to put a stop to domestic violence. In 2014, Premier Daniel Andrews reported that the Royal Commission had been created to look into the concerning growth in the rate of family violence and to provide recommendations for change. On March the 29th this year, Premier Andrews reported that the Commission had lodged its final report. The government's course of action to be taken resulting from the report is being discussed. This week, Ray Reid compiled this report in the follow-up to last week's investigation on Eye on the Peninsula.
For many years, concerns were raised about the alarming increases in instances and effects of family violence. So much so that in 2014, a Royal Commission was created to investigate the matter and recommend changes. Premier Daniel Andrews released this statement about the inception of the Royal Commission into family violence at the time.
Family violence is a national emergency. Family violence ruins lives. Family violence kills. I'm heartened, of course, by the many campaigns that have brought awareness to it. But these campaigns have told us something else as well. Awareness means little if the system is broken. And our system is. Thousands of dedicated workers and volunteers, dozens of important services. They work hard to make things better, but the system is still broken. It doesn't protect the vulnerable and it doesn't punish the guilty. It's failing. We expect victims to make a deeply personal and terrifying leap, to come forward to seek protection. But we're not doing our bit. We're not there to catch them when they make that leap. Instead, those seeking help and assistance fall into endless waiting lists, a support network that's underfunded, a police force that's under pressure, and intervention orders that often mean nothing. It's a betrayal. Well, the biggest law and order issue in our state is unfolding inside our homes. Friends, I cannot promise to keep every woman and her children safe. I cannot promise to make sure every family is free of violence, but I'm prepared to try. It is time to change it all. That's why today I announce that a Victorian Labor government will establish Australia's first Royal Commission into Family Violence.
And now, at the end of March 2016, just under 2 years from Mr. Andrews' initial advice about the creation of the Royal Commission, he has announced that the Royal Commission has released its final report and findings and recommendations. This is what he had to say.
Last year, 37 Victorians were murdered by the people they trusted the most. And we failed every single one of them. Family violence is a silent crime, deployed by cowards behind closed doors. It's Australia's number one law and order issue, but it's taken us too long to admit it. The numbers are staggering, the human cost unacceptable, and one thing's for certain, more of the same policies will only mean more of the same tragedies. Well, now it's time to change it all. Today, Australia's first Royal Commission into Family Violence hands down its full and final report. The Commission received 1,000 submissions. It's given us thousands of pages of answers and a raft of recommendations that will save Australian lives. We will implement every single one of them. We'll overhaul our broken support system from the bottom up. We'll punish the perpetrators of this violence. We'll listen to the people who survived it, and we will change the culture that created it. In doing so, Victoria won't just be leading the nation, we'll be leading the world. We have one chance here, and I refuse to look back in 10 years' time and admit that we could have done more to save innocent lives. The fact is, we've failed enough already. We're going to get this right, and we're going to do it by listening to the survivors, working with the professionals who support them, and bringing the Victorian people along with us every step of the way.
Clearly, there's a lot of work to be done. Mr. Andrews' commitment to implement each and every one of the Commission's recommendations may become troublesome unless he manages public expectations in the process of implementing and recommendations. Many recommendations may be costly and or require considerable time before they can be fully implemented. The many different sectors of the community combined with emergency services will be required to work closely together to ensure that information is put to good use and able to show that family violence has been reduced. The funding requirements for some recommendations may take years to provide. In some cases, the recommendations may even be ultimately implemented by subsequent governments. The really good thing that has happened is that many sectors of the community have already been at work implementing change on the peninsula. At the end of February, it was announced that a new family violence police squad has been established for the Frankston and Somerville region. The new squad is to be headed by Sergeants Peter Webster and Danny Lean. We have contacted Sergeant Webster, who has advised that both he and Sergeant Lean will be available for comment once they return from taking leave. We'll be working with both sergeants to help them in their endeavours to reduce the rate of family violence. I'm Ray Reid for Eye on the Peninsula.
Thank you to Ray Reid for putting that story together.
98.7, 98.3, RPP, the Peninsula's biggest variety.
You're listening to Eye on the Peninsula on RPP FM local radio with Piers Cunningham. In the last half of our program, we find out if crime figures are different to what is being reported. Should Rosebud West be renamed Capel Sound? Local journalist David Harrison has his ears and eyes open on issues that matter to you. And Mitch Gardner is on to anti-bullying. There's been a concerning number of assaults and criminal activity recently on the peninsula, namely the stabbings in Dramana and a shooting in Mornington the other week. What's being reported in local newspapers and what's actually happening on the street suggests there is some disparity in crime statistics. Secretary of the Police Association Victoria, Mr. Ron Iddles, made these comments to Deborah Maher.
A couple of weeks ago, a local newspaper reported that crime on the Mornington Peninsula has bucked the rising statewide trend, according to the latest figures released by the Crime Statistics Agency. Crime on the peninsula remains stable, they say in the CSA's opinion, between 2014 and 15. But Ron, we're hearing on the street down here that that's not the case. There's quite a lot of criminal activity still evident on the Mornington Peninsula. Can you put some light on that for us?
Look, I think the statistics that came out indicated that crime overall had increased around, I think, 8% across the state. Down on the peninsula, I know there's issues around theft of motor car, theft from motor car, and some street assaults. So I think if you drill down into the statistics, you would see that crime has slightly risen in those areas.
The spate of stabbings and shootings that happened just in Mornington and Dramana on the weekend, is that an indication of what is happening out on the streets, and are they drug-related with the increase of domestic violence?
I think in relation to, you talk about shootings and drugs, we know that every day in the northern suburbs is drive-by shooting nearly every day. And there was an incident down on the peninsula over last weekend. I think that's just a reflection of the way in which the criminal element is working. A lot of the firearms and violence revolve around drugs, in particular ICE. You've mentioned family violence. We know that certain areas of Melbourne, there's a higher reporting of family violence, in particular Casey area. But when you talk about the Mornington Peninsula, they're not immune to family violence. And I think with the Royal Commission, the amount of publicity recently, more people are coming forward.
Last Thursday, Premier Daniel Andrews said he is unhappy at the statewide rise in crime, and he says that Victorians don't want any more excuses. But having said that, we need money, don't we? We need funds to help get police more on the beat.
There hasn't been an increase in frontline police probably for the last 3 or 4 years. We look forward to hopefully some announcement in the budget, which will come out later this month. And I would like to see an increase in frontline police officers within that budget.
We've had some police stations closed down here, the 24-hour service. Maybe we should look at reopening some of those police stations 24/7.
I think where we have 24-hour police stations, the position of the police association is clear. There shouldn't be any restricted hours. If there is restricted hours, clearly it's a resourcing issue. Then that becomes a funding issue, which becomes a government issue. We will continue to negotiate with the government and Victoria Police to make sure that there's adequate service for the community.
The population is increasing down here on the peninsula. Are there any other issues that we need to focus on to get crime down?
Look, I think to some extent it is about numbers. The population increasing in Victoria is around 1.8%, in excess of 100,000 a year. What we want to see is a model where there's at least 102 police officers per 100,000 in the community. We have Rosebud, which has a shortage of police. I think if we go to Hastings, Mornington, they're working on minimum staffing levels. So there needs to be an increase right across the board. If you have a visible police presence, then sometimes that's good for prevention of crime. The Premier made an announcement recently that if Victoria Police wanted additional police officers or other equipment, then he made a commitment to supply that. So we look forward to the budget, and hopefully there's many things for Victoria Police which will ultimately benefit the community.
Secretary of the Police Association Victoria, Mr. Ron Iddles with Deborah. What's in a name? A lot, apparently. People who live in Rosebud West are divided about their suburb's name change to Capel Sound. Now that the community consultation period has concluded, the Mornington Peninsula Shire Councillors met last night and the vote was accepted by council. Approximately 5,600 letters were sent to Rosebud West residents, ratepayers and community groups in December 2015. Just over 1,900 responses were received with this breakdown. 1,065 people were in favour of the name change and 837 were against the name change. Now that the proposal has been accepted, the name change will go before the Office of Geographic Names for the state government to decide. Councillor of Seawinds Ward, Antonella Celli, disagrees with the name change. Born and bred in Rosebud, she thinks there is no rationale behind the name change. Rosebud West is part of the history and has its own identity. She said it's a manufactured perception if people think it will increase real estate prices. If the name change from Rosebud West to Capel Sound is successful, the postcode will remain as 3940. Rosebud West is part of the Seawinds Ward. I on the Peninsula will bring you more on this issue as details come to hand. Journalist David Harrison, based on the Mornington Peninsula, who reports for the IPPFM Breakfast Club program every Monday, shared these issues with presenter Brendan Telfer yesterday morning. We'll start with the council budget.
It looks like Mornpen News looking for some answers, and at the moment the Shire, as you mentioned last week, shutting them down a little bit.
Well, the council's clammed up on this. One of the devices spin doctors use is to try to make a problem go away by not saying anything about it. But I'm confident the community will finally gain access to the full record of councillor spending over their 6 areas of allowance. The difficulty is, at the moment, we have an overspend and the council staff seem disinclined to tell the public exactly what's going on.
Interesting. Well, we'll watch that one with some interest, and of course we'll report it here on RPPFM, or at least follow it very closely, especially with our new current affairs program, Eye on the Peninsula, now heard at 12 noon on Tuesdays. Now, other local stories that you've been following, Skylift down there at Arthur's Seat, what's going on?
Well, Skylift's very interesting. The state government, Richard Wynne, the local government minister, has called the project in, the behest of Simon McKeon, head of the Skylift Consortium, because the councillors have been rather tediously questioning various applications that he's made to vary plans, and some of them have varied the plans quite considerably from the plan that was given approval by VCAT.
So Wynn now has complete control over the vetting and the authority of this particular project. He's taken it away from the Shire.
Yeah, and in one sense, I suppose the Shire can breathe a bit of a sigh of relief on that, because one of the issues in contention is the bushfire plan up at Arthur's Seat, which some people regard as being really hot bushfire spots, very dangerous spot, with fires regularly occurring there. With climate change and other factors that could become worse. But the Shire can now effectively say, well, the state government's taken this problem over, so it's up to them, Parks Victoria, their agency. And they put in the hands of the Shire the responsibility for what are called secondary consents. Now, because secondary consents are a bit of a catch-22, you've got all the authority but no power to make any changes to what VCAT does. Now, the Shire, very inconveniently for the consortium, was insisting on scrutinising changes very closely. They had a couple of various Shire officers could see no wrong with anything that the consortium wanted to do. They wanted blue gondolas, that was fine. Then they wanted to change them to red. What a fantastically good idea, etc., etc. And it was just a little bit over the top.
Indeed.
And now the consortium has got direct access to the minister, who no doubt will agree with everything.
It's turned into such a big project, of course, that it now becomes a Victorian issue rather than a local issue, I guess. And I would say that speaks to a lot of development down here on the Mornington Peninsula, as we are eyed increasingly by the rest of the state, Melbourne, and perhaps even further afield. Speaking of that, what can we predict, or what are you looking at in terms of the release of the Shire draft budget? What's it saying? What's it looking at? The Shire is pulling some responsibilities back, but what about this Shire draft budget, David? You've had a chance to look at it?
It's been released and people are invited to make submissions on it, and I know that certain people will be, the Mornington Peninsula Residents and Ratepayers and Residents Association for one. Now, the Shire released their budget, which I've started to look at, and I've read through the media release that they put out with it, and I see good news and then bad news, even worse news, really shocking news, and let's cross our fingers news.
Wow.
The good news is that they've got rid of the $180 municipal charge, which is a flat rate. Everybody from the humblest cottage owner to the owner of a Portsea mega mansion pays a flat rate. All flat rates, including the GST, are regressive. They're unfair on the poor, and the poorer you are, the unfairer they are. Now, that rate has gone, and it's gone after some fairly intensive lobbying. The bad news is that this charge is going to be replaced by a waste service charge. Now, we currently have a waste charge, but it's included in the body of the rates. It's now going to be extracted from the rates, and it's going to have items added to it to make it up to, surprise, surprise, about $180, the same amount that the municipal charge was. Now, no such thing as a waste service charge appears in the Local Government Act that I could see, but there are provisions which no doubt will make that
possible.
Legal.
Yep.
I'm sure the Shire isn't trying to con anybody on this. Now, the service charge doesn't just cover what the waste charge does now, which is picking up your curbside bins. It also covers, to quote the Mayor, Graeme Pittick, street sweeping, footpath sweeping, street and drain litter collection, as well as beach cleansing. Now, I found the use of the word cleansing very interesting, because among its other meanings, it means to purify and free from sin or guilt. And our knowing beaches and some activities that occur on beaches under the cover of darkness, the freedom from sin or guilt is probably fairly important.
Very.
The really shocking news, pardon me, news, is that the new charge isn't capped. It's now outside the rates cap. And that's deliberately done because that means that while the rates cap will hold the basic body of your rates, the rate and the dollar, at whatever the government decrees it to be, this year, next year, I think it's going to be 2.5%. That cuts in from 2017-18. So they will now be able to raise some of these charges. The rates charge the waste charge is interesting because there's a government levy involved in that as well, and it was a difficult one to leave inside the cap because it meant that the state government could increase its rubbish levy on councils, and the council would have no control over it. It would simply flow straight through to rates.
Thank you, David Harrison, for keeping an eye on the peninsula. Are you concerned about your children not only being bullied in the schoolyard, but being bullied on social media? Cyberbullying is on the rise, and a number of local students took up the challenge to help students and parents deal with bullying issues. Mitch Gardner compiled this story.
Hi, I'm Mitch Gardner for RPPFM's Eye on the Peninsula. A group of students have sparked the beginning of a new anti-bullying campaign at their Mornington Peninsula High School last month with a public seminar. 17 Mount Eliza Secondary College Year 11 and 12 students created the By Youth For Youth group with the aim to prevent bullying of all forms in and out of the school. Leading psychologist and author of Bully Blocking, Bully Blocking at Work and Surviving Bullying at Work, Evelyn Field, spoke at the community event, describing bullying as an abuse of power. Field spoke largely about the accountability of parents, also explaining the inefficiency of traditional anti-bullying techniques. Alongside Field was Brett Lee, leading expert in internet safety and ex-police officer and detective, who discussed some of the finer points of internet safety, predominantly for parents. Lee explained that the power the internet holds on society is so strong that it can turn people around completely. He explained that the internet is very good at encouraging good people to make the wrong choices, sucking things out of people's minds and into their fingertips. Lee also spoke about the vast number of networks available online that are within reach of children, and the caution parents must take when letting their children online, and explained that any program where young people can connect with other people needs parental involvement, not because children cannot be trusted, but because of the excessive reach of people they connect with online. Lee continued to stress the importance of monitoring children's online presence, contending that the more technology that is out of the bedroom, the better, arguing that one is able to access the same things online outside of the bedroom as inside. Many attendees of the meeting left the night feeling educated and inspired to help do their part in removing bullying from society. For more information on the By Youth For Youth group, go to www.liveoutloud.me.
Thanks, Mitch. And as Mitch mentioned, if you need support or information on bullying, visit the website liveoutloud.me or contact your local school. That's it for another week on Eye on the Peninsula. If you have any news on the street, please contact the RPPFM radio station on 5975 1234. Next week, we discover the Anzac spirit with a follow-up on the unveiling and dedication of the Frankston War Memorial. Abacus Learning Centre will officially open its new premises, and we'll bring you an update with the Point Nepean development. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 FM when Eye on the Peninsula keeps you informed on issues that matter to you. You can also live stream from our website rppfm.com.au and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website. I'm Piers Cunningham, and thank you for listening.